On weekends, I tried to do things with my kids. I even gave my wife time off so that I could be with the kids. That's the main thing, is I intentionally set time for my kids.
My name is Tim Anderson. Welcome to Father and Friend, where men learn to live for the good of their families.
My name is Tim, and this is Father and Friend. This is the place to learn from other intentional dads. And today I am with Alan. He's the father of three adult children, 32 to 39. So he's got a lot of experience to share with us today. And we're going to discuss some of the things Alan has done and is continuing to do to have a positive impact on his family. So with that, Alan, what are some of the things you're doing with your family that, or have done with your family, that you feel like have really made a difference for you?
We'll start off when they were really younger. The main thing I made an issue of is I wanted to be present. My father, work was important, so he was always home late. Most Saturdays he ended up working, so didn't really see him too much. So I made an issue that when the kids were younger, when I came home from work, the attention was all on my kids. On weekends, I tried to do things with my kids. I even gave my wife time off so that I could be with the kids. That's the main thing, is I intentionally set time for my kids.
Okay, so we've got being present, intentional. And when we interacted before this, you had put a couple things down. I'll just name them real quick. You had said calling your kids weekly, telling your wife you love her daily, and helping around the house with chores. Would those still be in that category?
With the kids calling, it's now that they're older, the furthest one's 700 miles away. My son actually lives here because can't afford anything. My other daughter's 30 miles away, but we still call my daughters weekly just to chat with them, see how the grandkids are doing. Keep things going. My daughter who lives near here, we get together as a family at least monthly.
Wow.
And then our other daughter lives further. We try and at least set up some time that we get together. Like even right now down in April, my wife and I are going to travel to where she's at and babysit the kids while she has to work and they're off of school because they got 2 weeks off and she only got one. So she's a school teacher at college.
Nice. So it sounds like the being present at home while they were growing up has transitioned into I'm still present.
Exactly.
Calling you on a weekly basis and checking in and seeing how things are going. Can you describe, you said that when you were present at home, you made a commitment to after work, you would focus your attention on your family. Sure. Can you give me a mental picture of how easy or difficult that was for you to make that transition when you came home from work?
It ended up being relatively easy to one point, but I got a little story there. When we were first going, we got actually pregnant on the honeymoon. So it's like, it was just boom, 9 months later, we were still loving each other, but I would have an hour drive home. We lived in the time in the Bay Area of California, so the traffic was bad. I'd get off work and it took me at least an hour to get home. Mm-hmm. And part of the thing that was kind of interesting on that is as soon as I walked in the door, my wife being with the child all day long would pounce on me and start asking me the 50 questions or whatever, and I'm still shell-shocked from sitting in traffic and all that on the freeway. And finally we came to an agreement that, hey, let me at least get home, change from my work clothes, because I was a salesperson, so I had a suit, tie, nice clothes, and say, let me get it, at least change clothes, go to the bathroom, then you can pounce on me. And then after dinner, I usually then played with the kids so she can have her quiet time or do whatever she wanted. So that's kind of how I made the transition. It was just something that I knew when I got home that it was family time. So it was like as soon as I walked in that front door and changed my clothes, it was mode family, So I still remember playing with the kids. I sit there when they got a little older, since I had mainly two daughters, were the oldest. they always had hair clips. And I used to have hair back then. And one of the things they'd have fun was just putting as many of their hair clips they could in my head, you know, and it was just simple things like that, that just entertained them. We also did Awanas at our church. And even my daughter now, it's just like last year, she said, I remember we used to do the game that was called You Drive. And it was where I let the kids tell me whether to go straight, left, or right on the way home.
Nice.
So my daughter, here she was, still 38, and she still remembers what we did when she was 5, 6, 7. And it was only once a week, occasionally. So it's just taking that time. Yeah, it took us 10 minutes longer to get home. But look at the memory it set for my daughter of remembering the time where she gets to direct us home, you know, and just go through the neighborhood.
That's special.
So those are kind of the things, at least when they were younger. As they got older, I had the privilege with my job. I started 5:30 in the morning and I got off 2:30 in the afternoon. So when my kids were in their after school sports in high school, I had the privilege of at least being able to go to those without having to take time off for work. So that was kind of also special of being one of the few parents that was there and involved with their sport. They did swimming and mainly swimming, and then the other one did swimming and volleyball, but going to the games for them, to their events. So again, that's part of being the present.
About being present for the family.
Yeah, for the family. And then as they got older into college, it was still at least calling them weekly or something, just saying, hi, how you doing? How are the classes? What you've been up to? And then, you know, biting them, we got together on holidays. And if we could, we travel up even like my daughter went to Oregon State and they had Father's Day and Mother's Day, two different times where they go up. So my wife would go up during Mom's Day. I went up during Father's Day, visited. My other daughter went to school a good 8-9 hours away, but we still made a weekend trip during when it was good weather to head up and made sure we at least visited her even during that time.
So you mentioned earlier that you didn't have that when you were growing up?
No. My dad actually was a workaholic because that was the way. And if you ask, you know, if he loved you, goes, well, didn't you have food on the table, a roof over your head? You know, and so we had things. Occasionally went to some of my games that I played when I was Little League. I didn't do too much school sports. But yeah, it was, we did something still, but his thing was he took 1 week off every year in July. We go up to the mountains. So we go fishing together and that as a whole family. But on an overall basis, no, during the evenings, it wasn't that way. When I was younger, he was also more of an alcoholic. So he'd come home, have his two drinks before he even talked to us. You know, and by the time he got home, it was 7 o'clock at night. We were in bed at 8.
So do you feel like some of that was the momentum?
Oh, it was definitely. It was definitely the momentum. I said, I'm going to be here for my kids. I didn't want a father that was distance. The other thing is my dad's generation just didn't hug. So I mainly went through an effort of, I'm going to hug my kids. I'm going to tell them I love them. And so, yeah, I still hug them. We get together or we hug each other, you know?
Was that a hard transition? It might be hard to remember.
No, for me, it wasn't, because I wanted it so bad. You know, I just knew if I was raising my kids up, I wanted them to not go through what I did of going, Jesus, my dad really even loved me. You know, the first time I remember he actually hugged me, I can really remember, was going off to college.
So it was 18 years.
18 years. So it was all those other times of really not just a, hey, good evening, and a hug or something like that, or a hug before going to bed. It wasn't from him, but that was just their generation and how he was raised. And I just said, I'm not doing that. Because I want my kids to know that they're loved and cared for. So I made that effort and it was easy.
That's fantastic. So now your kids are older. You've clearly transitioned from the every day you see your kids to now we see them once in a while. And you mentioned one of those or a couple of those things that you still make the effort to call them and you still make the effort to get together as a yep. family.
Yes.
Is there anything else that you continue to do to be present in your kid's life at this different stage for them?
Not too much. Just trying to still be there. And no, that's about it. You know, what we still do, we're letting them have their own life, but we're there and attached, and they know that we're there for them.
When you call them, let me ask you this. When you call them, what does that conversation usually look like? Do you have something that you say the same time every time, or, you know, you ask them specific questions?
Well, yeah, I always send off, my wife goes, okay, send them a text, you know, because we always kind of talk kind of the same times, but it's, you know, when can we chat? And it's either a Sunday night or a Monday evening. And it's always, hey, so what you've been up to this week? Mm-hmm. You know, how's your work going? You know, last time you were talking about you were having pressure with this. How's that going? How's that working out? Mm-hmm. Hey, so the granddaughter was sick last week. How's she doing now? Is it, you know, and just, yeah, it's those type of things. And then we would say, here's what we've done this week. And if it was at all, like my wife might say, yeah, I had a lunch with some ladies, or like this weekend, she went to a women's retreat. So mm-hmm. she talked about that. And this weekend was my daughter. Well, today actually is my granddaughter's birthday. So we'll still be calling her, wishing her birthday. But we asked about the party they had Sunday. So that's just it. It's a simple thing. How's your week been? What's happening? And then we talk about future things, like we're going to visit them in April, the one further away in San Diego. So we discussed already, you know, some timing and so forth of that and this. And then my other daughter, who we haven't seen yet, so we arranged something that we're going to see each other this Saturday. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the conversations.
Yeah, no, that's good. Did you ever go through a phase with your children where you would ask a question like that and they would give you an answer such as good?
Oh yeah, actually it was my wife. The other thing that we've always done is we eat at the table together. Mm-hmm. So we did not disperse and watch TV and one person at the TV, one someplace else. Every meal we're at the table together. So my kids sometimes dreaded it when they were gotten to high school and such, because then my wife would ask the 50 questions like she used to ask me when I come home from work. She still did. And it was like, you know, so tell me about your day. What did you do? Who'd you talk to? You know, and just boom, boom. And yeah, there were some like, it was good. You know, we got those in high school. It was the same.
Same as yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. So, but no, now as they're getting older, no, they have conversations now. We don't get too much. It was, you know, if it was great, they kind of say what was so great about it, or if it was, this is going bad, they'll tell us. So, yeah.
Did you and your wife do anything specific when you had those types of conversations, or was it simply in the sort of rhythm of continuing to do them that over time realized that they're not going to get away with just
they realized, because it was a given with my wife. Even now, my son still cracks up at the dinner table. He goes, man, she still hasn't changed. She's still the 50 questions. We have a guest over, and man, we just kind of hide like this, because my wife will just fire away the questions. But that's who she is, and she knows more about people than I do. So because of that. But anyways, yeah, with our kids, they automatically knew that we sat down at the table, mom's going to be asking him these questions. So they, after a while, learn, I better have some answers, because it was usually the same questions. She just wanted another day and be present with it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really great. Awesome.
So then, as we were saying, I learned early about telling my wife I love her daily. Mm-hmm. I want to say this because we met a lady who was actually a coworker at the time, whose husband passed away while he was at work and she was at work. So, you know, like, and she goes, I don't even remember if we said we love you when you left that morning. And so because of that, it's like, you know what, you never know after you see each other in the morning. So I always make sure that I tell her I love her.
That's
Because who
special.
knows? Because he was in a car accident and that was it.
Yeah, that's it. Now, do you do the same with your kids?
Yeah, well, when we're talking, after we talk, we tell them we love them and that. And then when they, if they come over and visit, yeah, it's told that we love them. We don't tell them every day, but I mean, when they're not around. I don't even, my son's around. I still don't think I tell them now every day, but
How do you think that impacted your children? Because I imagine they probably heard you saying that to your wife.
I think it impacted them pretty good because they each now have pretty good. We actually like their in-law, the son-in-laws that we have. They chose great, and we try and involve them also in it. But yeah, I think it impacted them enough that they still know that.
I'd be curious if they tell their spouse.
Yeah, I don't know. I have to find out.
Yeah, you should ask him. I'm curious, do you tell your spouse you love him every day?
I mean, I know it was later when I was actually in high school that was, so I don't know if my older daughter heard it as much. But yeah. And they might not even hear it still because it's actually, I always left for work at 5:30 in the morning.
Oh,
I
so it
mean,
might have been
actually,
before they even
way
heard
back
you.
then, I left at 4:30 in the morning because I had to be at work at 5:30 and I had a 40-minute drive. So I would tell her at 4:30 in the morning that I loved her. So the kids might not have really been involved with that part at least. You know, but at least I came home, I'd give my wife a kiss. That was in front of them. It wasn't anything.
Cool.
Yeah, you know, showing affection is, I think, is something you got to feel free to do in front of the kids so that they learn, hey, it's okay.
Healthy affection.
Yeah.
The last thing you wrote on here was helping out around the house with chores. What did that look like when your kids were at home?
Oh, it's still the same now. It's like since my wife was home all day with the kids, my other joke is as I'd come home from work and I said I always go to the bathroom. Well, a lot of times back then we had diapers. We didn't have the cloth, we didn't have the disposable, so we had cloth diapers. So I always greeted with the cloth diaper in our only bathroom. So so part of that was okay. I knew what my chore was there, but when it came time for dinner. If I cooked, I would cook, do the dishes, but I always made sure I did the dishes for her because I don't mind that. And she's been around doing household chores otherwise. I'd help out as much as possible with things. Now, for the last 10 years, I vacuum the house. Every Thursday is vacuum day while she can still do the rest of her things. But we still have a rule that whoever cooks, the other one cleans. But I mainly tell her, you know what? You still go wash your face. You're gone for 20 minutes. By the time you're doing your thing in the evening to get ready, I'm done with the dishes. So it's just so we can still have that time together. Because otherwise, I can let her do the dishes. I'm just sitting around twiddling my thumb. Once she goes, does her face, then comes back. And well, there's 20 minutes missing that we could still at least be sitting present with each other, watch TV, or do something else. Yeah, so it's mainly we do the dishes, share that chore. The other thing I've always done since we were young is I've always once a year we wash, she wants the windows washed inside and out. So I'll go ahead and do that.
Now, did you, when your kids were growing up, and I guess you have one with you there, did you require them to do chores with you, or was it like, hey, we're gonna do them? You guys are busy with school. How did that work?
Yeah, well, they had a little bit like they were required to make their beds. They were required to keep their room clean. If it came to the nighttime, it was like, yeah, we at least okay, at least bring your dishes to the sink and you don't just we always leave them. We like them rinsed off and not just the grub. We don't put them grubby into the dishwasher. They get rinsed off, so. But yeah, so at least that part they were done. But the rest of it, yeah, we knew they either came home, like when they were in high school, our kids had swim practice was like at 6 or 7 at night. So they would come home, have dinner, and then go to practice. Then they'd have to get their homework done. So yeah, we also allowed them to get their homework done so they have time in the after, you know, in the evening or something to be with us too. So we weren't too strict with certain of the. You know, having to, except it was, you had to make your bed in the morning. Occasionally, there was the other thing because my wife just, we also made the arrangement that My wife wanted to, I wanted my wife to stay home. She wanted to stay home because both her parents worked. And in my generation, I noticed the kid, we had a few kids whose parents didn't work, and they were usually the ones that were first to go bad. So even when I was growing up, I said, I want my wife to not work either. So we made sure we did a budget and worked things out so my wife did not work. So her thing, she didn't mind. She took care of the house. So there wasn't as many chores that needed to get done at times for the kids. But yeah, their chore was to keep their area clean, do their homework.
Yeah, very nice. That's great. Did you ever have a kind of clear idea of what you wanted to teach your children in some of those habits? Or like, what was the value that you were hoping to pass on to them? You mentioned that when you were growing up, you didn't receive that kind of presence, that kind of love. What would you say you want your children to walk away from your house with and go, this is what I remember about my dad?
Yeah. Well, part of it, I'm going to go back to still the things of requiring them to do things. As kids, they're going to rebel. And so, I mean, I knew when I was younger, my dad asked me to do things. I remember throwing fits. I remember I sprained my ankle because I stomped and missed a step throwing just to take the garbage out. You know, so I didn't really put, I put the pressure a little bit that like them to do these things. But at the same time, I knew as they grew older that they would get more dependable and realize they need to get these things. You know, it just came with life, and it did happen. You know, so it wasn't, we, you know, instead of really having a blow up fight over you need to get this done, it was like, let's choose my battle. You know, they're still young. You know, if they were really, you know, depending on, as they got into high school, it was a little more, hey, I do, I would like your help at least doing the yard work, doing this, you know, but it was, it, so they knew certain things. So we didn't, when they were younger, didn't make it a battle. As they got older, they realized these are things that you have to do around the house.
How did you not? So you had these requirements that they would participate in household chores and helping out with family life. How did you not make it a battle? Right? Because I guess I think about,
well, there were certain times it was, I mean, there were certain times that, yeah, you kind of started to butt your head, and then you had to back off and say, how important is this today? You know, they knew they were standing there. I don't want to do that today. Okay, great. When will you do it again? You know, I'll let you get by this time, but the next time, you know.
So you persevered. Even if it was kind of a no-ish that day, you persevered and said, we're going to eventually do this. Kind of like the question asking, maybe. Like, we're going to keep asking you questions until you answer, and I'm going to keep expecting this of you until we get on the same page.
That's correct. I mean, so, I mean, you look at them now. Like, one of the times we'll talk to my oldest daughter and say, so what'd you do this weekend? She goes, oh, it was our deep cleaning day because they both work. So she, this is our deep cleaning weekend. You know, it's like, oh, okay. So see, you still learn that, that you have to clean the house. You still have to pick up. And it's, you know, so we kind of see the various things and kind of chuckle going, yeah, they caught that from, you know, maybe from their mom, maybe not as much me, but so, and then, you know, they all are responsible people at their work, you know, because they saw me, I went to work, you know, Dave, you know, and it's changed now because of COVID, but when our kids were even younger, if they had a little sniffle, my wife would say, nope, you're going to school. If you really get bad, you can call me and we'll pick you up. You know, so they kind of learned that you couldn't just be sick and not get by. You still had to show up, be present. They saw me do it for work. They had to do it for school. So even now, they just, they've learned the responsibility of those things. But yeah, it wasn't, we just decided it wouldn't have to be an all-out battle. I mean, when my daughter got in high school, though, my oldest one, oh, she would push the buttons of trying to stay out late. You know, she would even bring her friends in when it was time for her to come home and say, "Oh, I'm going to still go off and do this." And I said, "No, you know," and those were, we had some real hard blowouts.
Yeah, do you, can you tell me that story? I would love to hear that.
Well, like there was the one time it was, you know, we told our daughter it was like either Friday or Saturday. We always had 11 p.m. curfew. She knew it before she left. And she had all her friends down below, because you know where the parking was, and we were kind of upper level house. They had to walk upstairs get to, and she's at the front door saying, "Oh, I'm going to still continue." And it was just like, "Nope, you're coming home. You're staying here." "Oh, but they're all, you know," and it's like she was trying to use them as a leverage. And it was like, "Nope,
Oh,
nope."
they were all outside waiting for her.
Yeah, because she was trying to use it as a leverage that, see, they're still here, I can still go off. And so that was where, no, it was like you put your hand down. And there was a few other times she continued to, but that was our hardest part, was her junior and senior year when she had a car, able to drive. And
Do you think if you asked her about that, she would remember that?
yeah, she probably would.
I'd be also curious. I'd be curious what how she remembers that story.
Yeah, or even just any of them, because she was hard-nosed. She's a type A, and she would stand her ground, and I would stand mine just as bad. And it got to be pretty verbal. So if anything, it was those high school years with her. Now my other two saw that, and they were like, "Okay, we're learning from her. We're not going to push the buttons."
It's interesting how that works, isn't it? When you can see someone else making errors and you go, yeah, maybe we won't do that.
So our first one as she got older was tough, because she was more independent, still wanted to go off and do these things. And you know, and we didn't push things. We found out some stories afterwards when she was in college and went, "Yeah, so you kind of learned some lessons from us trying to be free out there," and kind of said, "Oh, I really can't." And we did tell her one thing when she went to college. I remember my wife telling her, saying, "Don't call us to bail you out. If it happens, don't call us." In other words, watch what happens. So she tells us multiple times, though, that, "Oh, yeah, I was out driving and the police officer tried to pull me over for this and that, and he ended up letting me go." You know, it was like, yeah, see, she knew she had to watch if she drank, because they pulled over often. She was in a college town, you know. So, and she was one time even asked, "Why do you guys always pull me over?" And they go, "Well, because you got the car that's usually stolen. It was just an old beater." So there are
There.
those stories.
That's good. That's awesome. So help me, let's go back a little bit. And if you were to go back to your younger self when your kids were young, or maybe before you were a father, is there anything that you would tell yourself or that you would do differently than what you did? Or
Yeah, well, I was,
advice you would give yourself?
yeah, well, part of it, I guess, would be, it was kind of where we were at then and where we're at now too, as Christians. We've kind of changed our philosophy and things. Back then, I relied more on the church, on bringing my kids up and so forth. I mean, yeah, we all talked about Christ, but I think I try and do a little bit more of showing the kingdom to them, because, but see, a lot of that's because of what we've learned now in the last 10, 15 years, my wife and I, that it's not just you're saved and you're forgiven and you get to go to heaven. I mean, there's not more of Christ in us, but I won't kind of go there. But it's more of the supernatural, if we just want to say that we are saying that the Lord should be showing more of his signs, wonders, and miracles. And I think that's what keeps kids going, or people in general excited, is having encounters with the Lord. So our kids really didn't have that to the churches we were going to. So our oldest daughter, of course, she was into more friends. And when we moved from one area and left all her friends, move up to Oregon from California, she kind of rebelled on that, because now she had to try and make new friends. And it's hard when you're in sixth, seventh grade to make new friends. We went to a church, and the church already, the students there were already cliquish, so they didn't allow her in. So by high school, she just didn't want to go to church, but we didn't also just drag her. So she said, I don't want to go. We just kind of said, that's fine, because you're old enough to make a decision. They don't, she doesn't really follow the Lord, but she still remembers all her Awana verses she memorized, because she still discusses that and says, yeah, even her husband, yeah, she still occasionally brings up this verse or two, you know. So it's still there. We still talk about it. And maybe more, I would have more time as they got older, somehow trying to figure out ways of at least discussing the goodness of God, of how he's still there present. They still will call us and say, hey, we got this coming up. Will you at least pray for us or do this? My other daughter in the middle, she tried to go to churches, didn't really find any of that fit. And then she went into what is it called again? Evolutionary biology. And so she goes, well, since this is evolution, it's kind of against the Bible. She kind of just kind of phased out. But now she's going, getting her doctorate by Liberty, which is a Christian school.
Oh, interesting.
So, and her kids are going to, she sent her kids all the time. So they were old enough. She sent her kids to Awanas. She married her high school boyfriend who is not a Christian. They still don't. So none of them go to church, but she takes them to Awanas. So
that's really interesting.
We're still there. So it's still there. But I think maybe as they were getting older, some way they still keep an influence somewhere or another is what I would like to change. But I still kind of question how I would have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I was about to ask you, what do you think that could have looked like for you to
practice? Well, we still aren't ashamed to talk about, what we did. Even now during Christmas, because we'll talk to our grandkids and they didn't know who God was because they don't really talk that much at their house. So we try and bring it up a little bit more at Christmas. We did bring up, the Christmas story. Easter, we still bring up, the whole thing that Christ, we have a very short, but it's not a long drawn out. So,
yeah, you're doing what you can to communicate God's truths in the opportunities you have to do it.
Yeah. And they know where we stand, because we'll talk about how we went to church, what we did at church, or that we're doing this or that. So they're not ashamed. They're not afraid of not knowing that we're there, but we're not going to still, every time we meet them, we're not going to throw scriptures down their throat. We're not going to bash them for this or that and say, because it's a choice. It still is. And I've read the book by The Awe of God by John Bevere, and it still kind of makes you think on parts of, okay, you say yes, but are you still going? I don't know. I've heard some other people talk about after death, they went to hell. And I was surprised who's there. So it kind of like, are you really saved if you say yes? Or is it that verse that says, I never knew you? Even though that says we cast out this, we did this. In other words, they were at church sitting next to you. They worshiped next to you. But was it a relationship or not? I think is where the real thing comes down to.
Yeah.
You can't do that. And you can't force somebody to have a relationship with somebody.
No, you can't. You're right. No, you can't. And I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's 100% true that only God really knows where someone's heart is.
Right.
And you can't even see that from the outside. You can't look at someone and go, at least not with 100% assurance. I mean, you might go, okay, there's not really fruit there, so probably not. But even then, that's not a certainty. I mean, the criminal on the cross is a great example, or even any of the disciples. You think about the disciples who abandoned Jesus, and are like, yeah, I guess it's over. They had kind of lost their faith.
Yeah,
at least for that moment. And so we can't understand the depths of other people's hearts. And yet at the same time, and this is what I love about the gospel. It's, in one hand, it's extremely simple. Believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and confess with your mouth that he's Lord and you'll be saved. And then at the same time, it's extremely complicated because it has to do with human hearts.
Yeah.
And what we really what we really believe, not just what we say we believe, but what we really believe deep down. And that's a hard well to navigate and understand. So it sounds like you did the best you could with what you knew at the time related to taking your kids to church, telling the truths of God, having them memorize scripture, being present with them, telling them you love them and your wife, and teaching them some responsibilities and helping them to know how to take care of themselves. And then yet at the same time, maybe you would have done more of the, I don't know if it would be scripture memory or.
No, I don't know if it really would have been that. Like I said, I'm still looking back and looking at things, and there's been studies that really only about 3% in America of the people who confessed Christ stay as followers. Where you can go to Africa, South America, and their numbers are higher in the 90s percentile of saying yes, stay. And I think a lot of it is that we're just knowledge. We're like, okay, memorize the scriptures, and now here's the do's and don'ts. And as I've been the last 10 plus years now, I've actually rethought my whole thing of saying it's not a kingdom of do's and don'ts. And I'm even reading where Paul's writing, I think it's in Colossians, where he says, why are you falling for the philosophies of man? And it says, do not touch, do not do this. He says, that's an outward appearance, but it leaves nothing to godliness. And see, and the whole thing is really, is Christ is in us. So what's possible? I mean, we kind of blow by or kind of skip the part of John 14:12, where it says, if you believe, you can do the same things I did. And then later it gets on to in 17, he says, God, as you sent me, I send them. And then John 20:21, he goes to again, is I was sent, I now send you. So the same equipment Jesus had as soon as he came into us, John 17 says, we have the same glory and we have the same love that Jesus got from the Father. So more and more, we should be seeing more of the supernatural signs, wonders, and miracles just because of who's in us. And I'm thinking you see that in the other countries where here we skip all that.
So would you say that if you had the, relational maturity with Christ, you would have liked to have shown your kids more of that as they were growing up?
More of an encounter, more of the kingdom actually operating. I mean, it's we're still kind of seeing it, but even now, you know, like my wife and I are both involved with the healing ministry, and it's like some of the stories we can now see that just, you know, people miraculously healed. And so, you know, our kids, if they saw that or even involved with that, if they even prayed for somebody and saw them healed, it changes your perspective completely. You know, and then, you know, just more involvement, how God does care about our finances. He really doesn't want everybody to be poor, because if you read the Old Testament, they weren't. He gave them the opportunity of being there. Even in the New Testament, when he says, hey, I'll provide everything. I mean, look at this. He told Peter to go catch a fish and pull a coin out of his mouth, pay taxes. I mean, that's so extraordinary. Pull a coin out of a fish's mouth, like you're crazy. You know, but he's going to do that. Even Corinthians says that, you know, okay, whatever you give, I will fill your barns up. I will give you your finances so you can give to the ministry. And you even have money in your barns, in your savings account. And it's all operating by the kingdom. And it's the kingdom runs by financial laws. You know, like we have the laws of gravity and the laws of electricity. Well, there's the law of faith and there's the law of giving, that actually the giving is known throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament. So as long as you follow the proper laws, and this is what I came down knowing in the last 10 years, if you follow the proper laws of the kingdom, that Jesus demonstrates, we get the same result because you can't break the law. The law even happens to non-believers because mm-hmm. it's the law.
Yeah, interesting. That's great. So, well, I'm super glad that we've had the opportunity to talk today. I'm glad we've discussed some of the things about what you did as father and that have been effective. And
well, I hope it helps somebody. I hope
it does. And it's really good. You know, it's really excellent. You know, I'm 42. My kids are 14 and under. And it really is helpful to hear a perspective of someone who's already passed through that stage of life and to understand some of the things that I myself can do, even for my own family, to help my children launch into their own lives.
Yeah.
And hopefully for the glory of God. You know,
right. So that's the main thing is I guess my wife and I, we wanted, like you just said, we wanted to launch the kids so that they had a firm foundation mm-hmm. in their life to go onward and be successful, which is just mainly, you know, you might have struggles, but you continue going forward and you can still have joy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, Alan. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, appreciate the offer and the opportunity. Thank you.
Fellow fathers and friends, so glad you could join us for this episode. To stay connected, visit our website at fatherandfriend.com. Sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media sites. Be sure to like, follow, and share with fellow dads and families in your community. If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, send us a message and let us know. Until our next episode, keep showing up, loving deeply, and making an impact for the good of your family. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Father and Friend.